Chapter 3. The Mountain, Unknown. The cleft in the mountain gaped like an ugly wound, spitting fire and billowing smoke. From 60 kilometers out, under a blood-red sky, it had appeared no wider than a crack, an insignificant fissure in the rock. Up close, it was a chasm of fathomless darkness and endless fire. Violence burned in those depths, and they promised only destruction. A gunship fought against the flung dirt and burning air, its flanks relentlessly battered and stained with soot. It rolled hard against the currents, engines flaring as it turned its flank to the side of the mountain. The Drake icon, emblazoned on the side of the gunship, caught the magma glow, flickering in lurid orange light that bled in through the view slits. Though the ship trembled, the two warriors in its hold were unmoved. Zaitos leaned on his thunderhammer, the head of the weapon steady against the quivering deck. His large, gauntleted hands wrapped the pommel, one atop the other, clenching and unclenching. His helm sat alongside him, snarling at shadows, maglocked to the grav bench. His forehead touched the scalloped knuckles of his gauntlets. Eyes closed, he breathed slowly and calmly through his mouth, filling the hold with the scent of ash and cinder. Those of Vulcan's bloodline were said to breathe the fire of the mountain. In this way, it was true. Abidemi sang. Sitting opposite his sergeant, he bellowed above the roar of the storm outside, singing of Nocturne and the deep drakes, of their majesty and fearsome elemental power. He held the sword Drokoros, sheathed across his lap in both hands. It had been Numion's blade once, but now it had passed to another, to be wielded in his name. Abidemi had no doubt that when his end came at last, a different warrior would take up the sword. It was a dragon tooth, a kind of Nocturnian blade only a few smiths knew how to forge. Its serrated edge could even cut bonded ceramite and adamantium. Salamanders liked to name their weapons, not an uncommon trait amongst the legions, but a tradition no warrior of the 18th would ever eschew. Strength resided in names. The better the name, the greater the strength. A sword was just a sword until its naming. Then it became something other. It gained a spirit.
Gargo,
Zaitos said, rasping but making himself heard across the vox. He never opened his eyes and only moved his lips to speak, a statue of onyx and dark jade sitting on the grav bench, growing impatient. Abidemi stopped singing and merely sat, eyes blazing into the darkness.
"Am I to ride into the burning chasm of fire, brother?"
asked Igon Gargo from the pilot's throne.
"You are to do Vulcan's will," Zaitos replied, still unmoving. "I cannot see him or hear him to know his precise will, brother."
"Our black smiter sounds a little strained,"
offered Abidemi. Zaitos smiled.
"Should I be more empathic?"
he asked. Abidemi leaned back on the grav bench as far as his armor's generator would allow. He feigned nonchalance.
"Oh, I would not go that far. But I have a keen desire not to crash upon Deathfire's crags. At the least, I think Vulcan would look down on that."
Now Zaitos laughed, raising his eyes and favoring Abidemi with a feral grin.
"Death upon the flanks of the mountain, or death inside the mountain, is still death."
Abidemi thought on that and gave a facial shrug.
"Well, as we are born in fire."
Zaitos nodded, his gentle jibing at Gargo's expense at an end.
"Ash and flame it is, then,"
he said, and raised the vox again.
"Into the chasm, Black Smiter! Into the flame and the hells of Deathfire! That is where our father awaits us."
Gargo did not reply. He heard Abidemi's singing across the vox and gave a fierce grin. The gunship banked, stabilizers flaring urgently as it turned sharply and growled with sudden and violent thrust. They speared towards the crack in the mountain. Flames lapped at the hull, searing fresh burns into the armor plates. Chunks of cinder fell upon the prow, some embedding themselves, still burning as the gunship flew on. The roar of the furious earth rose to a crescendo that shivered bone and rattled the hull, as though a giant shook it in an angry fist. Smoke descended, a crackling black miasma of pyroclastic cloud that enveloped the gunship, smothering it utterly. Every auger died at once, and the darkness became abject as the gunship entered the mountain and disappeared. From the pilot's throne, Gargo saw only darkness through the viewing pane. A bank of soot and ash rolled over the glacis, smearing his only means of guiding a vessel bereft of its senses. It was the very definition of flying blind. He trusted to sound instead, listening to the pitch and yaw as the hot air inside the mountain pulled at the gunship. He fought it, striving not to overcompensate and throw them into solid rock. The gunship was a Thunderhawk, a pugnacious vessel. It had seen some use in the war, despite being a less favoured option during the Great Crusade. It lacked the size and brute strength of a Stormbird, but possessed greater manoeuvrability. Hardy, as it no doubt was, a collision inside the burning interior of a volatile volcano would see it destroyed. So Gargo listened and tried very hard not to crash and to die. After almost a minute, the viewing pane began to clear, the soot burned off by the heat of the lava-filled chasm rushing up to meet them. Gargo gritted his teeth, hauling on the flight stick.
Blood of Nocturne!
A sharp ascent provoked a shriek of disquiet from the engines, but the deathly plunge to certain immolation had been averted. Easing back on the throttle, his heart steady, Gargo appraised their surroundings and felt awe. A cavern yawned before them, immense, as large as a city. Crags encroached upon it, great rending claws reaching into smoke-shrouded depths. Below, a lava sea spat tendrils of flame as molten rock slid through its burning currents. Pillars of fire rose up, magnificent but ultimately ephemeral. Clouds of sulfurous gas expanded from gigantic fumaroles, thick and coiling like whirlwinds slowed in time, each turn bringing them closer to dissolution, only for new plumes to emerge in the wake of their passing. A vault above strained with spears of rock, an army of stalactites dripping with caustic and corrosive vapours. Majestic as it surely was, the cavern paled in comparison to its denizens. Through languid palls of ash black, Gargo saw them. Gargantuan, armoured in hoary overlapping scales, each at least as large as a breacher shield. Teeth as long as spears, hunched in hollows and caves, their eyes flashed like flaming rubies. Hissing saliva drooled from their fanged mouths, corroding the rock where it made contact. Their dark, leathery tongues lashed the air, as if seeking to taste the morsel in their midst. A few stirred to bellow their discontent, their stentorian calls resonating through the rock. The majority merely bore witness. Unsurprisingly, they seemed unconcerned.
Leviathan, Gargo whispered.
Few had ever seen these deep drakes, let alone done so and lived. Here, Gargo rode the ship through an entire nest. In their blindness, the salamanders had descended farther than he realized.
Brothers,
he dared utter, though he kept his voice quiet across the vox. Out of caution or reverence, he could not say for certain. One of the larger drakes uncoiled, serpentine and magnificent. The gunship would have fit into its mouth entire. It eyed them with fascination and belligerence as it slid into the lava sea, a great horned tail following in its wake as it swam into the depths.
It is almost beyond my reckoning, Zaitos hissed. Tread warily here, Gargo. This is no longer a realm of men. How many do you think there are?
Asked Gargo.
Enough to rend apart this ship and us with it many times over, Zaitos replied.
Abidemi had no words, stunned into silence at what lay beyond the view slits. The cavern felt endless, and where the lava sea met its edge, it spilled ferociously into an even deeper well, A vibrant, trembling heat flickered up from this pit, suggesting more flame at its nadir through the occluding darkness. Gargo led them into it, easing the gunship into a gentle descent, spiralling into the void below rather than arrowing headlong. A crag of rock jutted from the pit wall, flattened into a rugged plateau, and revealed in a brief parting of black smoke.
Oh, blood of Nocturne!
He swore, as he saw a figure calmly standing upon the rock, as incongruous here in this underworld as the gunship itself. Vulcan had armoured himself and held a hammer close to his breast as he watched the gunship descend. As it came closer, the Lord of Drakes raised the weapon, and Gargo kept the vessel steady as he engaged the forward ramp.
Is it him?
Asked Abidemi, as they drew nearer, and all the finery of the Primarch's craft and artisanal skill became apparent in his armour. Zaitos frowned as he turned to the other.
Who else would it be?
No,
uttered Abidemi, his tone suggesting to Zaitos a question meant for long before this moment.
Is it him?
There was no time for Zaitos to consider his answer. Up close, it became obvious that the promontory Vulcan had chosen was crumbling. Soon it would be no more. The fiery depths below seemed bottomless. The Primarch looked unconcerned as the prow of the gunship opened to admit him, and with a single bound he was aboard. He had leapt into a crouch, head down, hammer across his bent knee. Behind him, seen by Zaitos and Abidemi through the closing ramp, the plateau fragmented and collapsed. It fell slowly. Reluctantly, but disappeared into darkness all the same.
Father,
said Zaitos, genuflecting before his Primarch. Abidemi mimicked him.
Rise, both of you, said Vulcan,
his gaze as forbidding as the deep drakes they had seen in the cavern, and much more fearsome. Vigor emanated off Vulcan, as hot and vibrant as the flaming core of the mountain from which he had seemingly been reborn. An almost otherworldly aura pervaded in his presence, a shimmering of vitality as of a blade freshly forged and gleaming. He was resplendent, a feral king in his finest panoply of war. They obeyed almost without thinking. Vulcan arose too, his long cape of drake hide unfurling like a banner behind him, his stature dwarfing that of his sons. The splinter had gone from his chest, and was instead sheathed at his belt like a gladius. He wore an amulet too, a large disc engraved with the image of seven hammers. The Primarch's drake-scale green armour was veined with gold. Dragons and their kin had been graven upon its plates. His scalloped gauntlets ended in claws, and a long-snouted helm clung to his thigh, draconic, its teeth bared in anger. Red eye slits glared from its faceplate, impassive, unforgiving.
Three sons, he said, his voice as deep as thunder. You came.
At first, Zaitos mistook his meaning.
Well, as you asked us to, my lord. We spoke to no others of your miraculous return.
Vulcan nodded, his hand upon the side of the hull.
A good ship, he said, silently appraising. It will serve us well.
Vulcanis,
said Gargo, giving its name.
But I would ask how it shall serve, Lord Vulcan, said Zaitos. I'm yet to understand how we will find the shadowed road.
Vulcan clapped a gauntlet on his shoulder.
Soon, I promise, Barak, you will know everything. And you, Atok, he said, glancing at Abidemi. No secrets will be kept from my sons. But we cannot linger here. It is more dangerous than you could know.
He smiled, and in a way the expression terrified Zaitos.
We must head deeper.
Gargo flew them into the pit, with only Vulcan's voice across the vox alight with which to navigate the underworld. Great oceans of lava roared in the darkness, throwing off light enough to deepen the shadows, but nothing more. Endless tracts of smoke rolled across the ship, sparking with pieces of burning material, thickened by ash. On Gargo flew, Vulcan at his ear, guiding the ship with his voice. Deeper still, and the mountain had yet to reach its nadir. A sense of otherness intruded on the salamanders that Vulcan appeared oblivious to, or was studiously ignoring. The rock formations subtly changed, and had more in kind with rugged scale. Crags, many times larger than the gunship, drooled, slick, smooth, and not at all like stone or earth, more like bone. Caves gaped invitingly, their wide arching mouths ringed with bony stalactites and stalagmites, oddly ranked and partially uniform. Sulfurous gas exuded in heavy exhalations, slow and regular. Vulcan steered Gargo through fissures and clefts, ancient tunnels, but stayed away from the fanged cave mouths and said nothing of why. As they flew low across a river of lava, a hump bulged up from the morass, huge, forbidding, barely visible in the dark.
"Cleave to the tunnel edge, Eigen," whispered Vulcan,
and Zaitus could not force down a tremor of unease at the Primarch's sudden caution. The lava mound rose a little higher, and a dark slit appeared across its middle. A membrane slid slowly over it, revealing an oily sclera. Then the mound submerged, an island sinking beneath the sea, and Vulcan raised his voice from a whisper again. Zaitos said nothing of this, and only realized how tightly he had gripped his hammer when he heard the creak of protesting metal. He released the breath he had been holding and spoke, his voice harsh and low.
"Is this the Shadowed Road?"
Certainly the soot and drifting pools of ash lent it that quality.
"We are close," said Vulcan. "Only a little farther now."
Abidemi gave Zaitos an incredulous look and made a gesture to the Primarch. Vulcan's eyes were closed. Beyond the view slits, the tunnel walls trembled. At first, Zaitos thought it was heat haze, but then he knew it was something else entirely.
"It's moving,"
he said, still unable to do much more than rasp.
"The rock is...
"Alive," Vulcan suggested.
Zaitos nodded. Vulcan must have heard it in the growl and purr of his armour, for he answered.
"It is not rock, Barak."
"And then what?"
Abidemi began.
"They are the world serpents, the eldest of all the Erdrakes of Nocturne. So old they have passed into myth."
"I can see them, Lord. They are not myth."
Vulcan laughed, echoing, unnerving.
"All in this place is myth," he said. "None but you here have ever seen it. These Erdrakes are Nocturne. They coil around its heart, forever entwined, their breaths the very movement of the earth."
He turned, and his eyes flared red like two blazing forge fires.
"Are you disturbed by this, my sons?"
"It is beyond my understanding,"
said Zaitos, looking down disbelievingly at his hand as it trembled. Dryness crept into his throat, nullifying speech. Abidemi clung to Numion's sword, fingers taut on both hands, but did not answer either.
"It is beyond primal," Vulcan told them. "Beyond even my father's genecraft to fully inure you against."
"I find the feeling unfamiliar,"
Zaitos replied, but ceased the trembling in his hand. He snarled as if rejecting the sensation.
"Rest easy, my sons. The Erdrakes sleep, and have done for thousands of years. You merely witness their slumber, the dreaming of god-beasts."
"And what, my lord,"
said Abidemi,
"do such things dream of?"
Vulcan's teeth shone brightly, a white crescent cutting through the shadows.
"Fire."
As they passed beyond the long tunnel and entered a broader, lightless chamber, Gargo took the ship to the edge of the lava river. A gelatinous cataract fed down from it into a shallow basin, spilling across a flat stump of rock that diverted the languid flow to either side of a monstrous cliff.
"This is it," said Vulcan. "Follow the cliff all the way to the bottom, Eigen."
The gunship banked at first, then slowly came around, angling into a patient descent that followed the sheer face of the cliff. A belt of cloud impeded the viewing pane, but passed in seconds. Then came another, and another, the gunship spearing each fresh veil, until a massive cavern appeared through the dregs of clinging ash. A great magma sea spread across the cavern floor, fuming, shrouded and undulant. A glow bathed the cavern walls, the shadows cast upon it flickering as if they were possessed. A flat circular plateau of stone jutted up from the burning sea like a pugnacious chin. It shone with obsidian lustre, the veins of volcanic glass reaching the cliff and colonizing it.
"Here," said Vulcan. "Put us down here, Igon."
Descent thrusters flaring, the gunship raised its prow as it came down to land. Clawed stanchions extended from beneath the hull, digging into rock, grasping for purchase. A bird of prey, rendered in adamantium. As the turbofans died to a low whir, the disturbed ash and grit falling into gentle eddies, the forward ramp opened, and the gunship settled into position. Vulcan emerged first, unblinking into the magma light. Zaitos followed, taking in everything beyond the confines of the hold. He wore his helm now, observing pointedly that his Primarch did not.
"My lord, the atmosphere,"
he began, his armour alerting him to the extreme heat and the concentrations of toxic volcanic gases in the air. Vulcan waved away his concerns before they could be voiced.
"It is a small matter, Barrick. Keep your war helm on, my son."
Abidemi joined him, Gargo a moment later from the cockpit. Paint blistered where it was thinnest at the gunship's hard edges. Bare metal glinted through in sliver slashes.
"Oh, he is unhelmed,"
said Gargo quietly, gesturing to the Primarch.
"I know,"
Zaitos replied, his eye venturing ahead of Vulcan. Past the plateau of rock where their vessel had alighted, a few crudely hewn steps led up to a pillar of stone, a gently smoking caldera at the summit. The blood of the mountain had grown thin here, little more than pale yellow sulphurous deposits, and Zaitos felt his heart warn him of something momentous as he caught sight of the shape worn into the middle of the caldera. Anthropomorphic, almost fetal in aspect. He did not dare to wonder, though he looked askance at his Primarch. Vulcan paid him no heed. The Primarch's attention had fallen upon a spire of rock thrusting up from the lava. Then, as if he were expecting to see something but had found it absent, he looked away. He stopped at the edge of the plateau and turned to his sons.
"This is the deep forge, the moor," he told them, gesturing to a thin path that led from the plateau to an antechamber feeding off from the main cavern. "It is where I forged my armour."
Zaitos saw an anvil, the tools of a smith laid neatly upon its face. Its edges still glowed with the act of forging, and he could scarcely comprehend what sort of wonders might have been wrought here. Vulcan's voice arrested his brief reverie.
"Come, my sons," he said, beckoning them to his side.
A second set of steps on the opposite side of the plateau to the path that led to the forge, beaten smooth by repeated and monumental impacts, wended down to a chasm broad enough to admit the gunship. Within the chasm stood a crooked arch of night-black stone. Gems encrusted the arch, some as large as Zaitos's war helm, others the size of his clenched fist. Sickly green light emanated from the gems. Runes had been etched into the stone face, which was smooth and somehow organic.
"Bone," he said disbelievingly. "This is fashioned of bone."
He turned to Vulcan, who was watching him pensively.
"I know of only one race that crafts with bone."
"The Eldar,"
said Gargo, clenching the spear he had brought from the gunship a little tighter. It was the same one he had taken from the rig of the jetbike, only made more ornate, with a flamer attached to the haft below the spear tip.
"An Eldridge gate," Vulcan said. "It has been here since before the days of the Nibble, hidden beneath the heartblood of Deathfire. Slavers who once ravaged Nocturne used it. Our ancient tribesmen had no defence against such art."
"Cowards,"
spat Zaitos. During the Great Crusade, Zaitos had liberated many worlds that had fallen under the yoke of the Eldar. He had fought the aliens gladly, and though some in the Legion held to the belief that the Eldar were a schismatic race, split into disparate factions, he saw no distinction. This gate, though, had all the trappings of a darker aspect of the eldritch creatures. Its very appearance was offensive.
"Have you brought us here to destroy it, Father?"
asked Abidemi, his hand around the hilt of Drokoros.
"No,"
said Gargo, lessening his grip on the spear.
"He means for us to use it. Don't you, my lord?"
Vulcan nodded.
"It has been broken for an age, sealed here in the nadir of the world. It is how we reach the shadowed road. Komora."
"And from there?"
asked Zaitos, unable to take his eyes from the gate for fear of what might come out of it. Vulcan let the pommel of his hammer hit the ground. The blow resonated down the haft with a low but defining chime of metal.
"Terror."
The chime continued, echoing and intensifying. Underfoot, the rock began to tremble.
"Have no fear, my sons," Vulcan assured them. "It will not stand after our passage through it. But we must act swiftly."
Zaitos felt the first stirrings of a gentle wind against his face, and then saw a crackle of dark light manifesting in the crook of the archway. It grew larger, splitting in several directions like caged lightning. The wind grew into a tumult, deathly cold in spite of the mountain, in spite of his armor. Hoarfrost began to form upon his faceplate. Below, the earth rumbled with thunderous intent. Eldritch winter and primordial fire warred for dominance. Vulcan took up his hammer, a fragment of rock pinging off his shoulder guard from above like rain.
"It is time to leave."
None argued, though Gargo glanced up at the falling rock.
"Aegon," Vulcan gently urged.
As if woken from a dream, Gargo nodded and made for the gunship still idling on the plateau. By the time the Primarch and his legionaries were aboard, and the gunship had begun to rise, a storm raged inside the confines of the Eldritch Gate. Zaitos saw it as the ramp closed, a crackling maelstrom of dark lightning resembling a forbidding horizon. Then the hold sealed closed, and it disappeared from view. The gunship began a ponderous turn, fighting the searing updrafts coming off the mountain, its turbofans beating furiously. Falling rock battered the hull as it tried to gain more loft. Zaitos exchanged a look with Abidemi, whose gaze barely left the ceiling of the hold.
"We stay here much longer and we don't leave," his eyes said.
A spit of flame caught Zaitos's eye through a viewslit. It speared upwards, a pillar of fire reaching into the vaults of the cavern. A lava sea in turmoil. A second geyser burst forth a moment later, a long plume of burning magma. Then came a third, a fourth, until pillars of fire were surging from the mantle of Nocturne in a sustained frenzy of volcanic eruption. The gunship banked urgently, its right wing dipping with a sudden burst of its left thruster. A spit of flame roared across its armoured flank as the plateau cracked apart and surrendered to the lava sea. Zaitos felt the heat prickle his skin through his war helm. For a few seconds, the darkness of the hold retreated before a harsh flare of light. If they were to die here, then at least they would die with Vulcan. Despite the angry trembling of the gunship and the unfettered fury of the mountain as it reached out to impale them on spears of flame, the Primarch crouched in silence. He sank to one knee in the middle of the hold, hammer braced across his leg, unmoving. Zaitos glanced across the hold where Abidemi had taken up a place on the grav bench. Zaitos did the same, the shriek of warning sirens within almost forgotten amidst the rising tumult outside. He set his thunder hammer as he had before, the walls shuddering so hard they rattled his teeth. His skull ached. He lowered his head as he had before. He closed his eyes as he had before. He grew still. Abidemi sang. He sang of Nocturne and the deep drakes. He sang of the old tribes, voice rising against the bellow of the mountain. He sang without cease as the engines roared with furious exhalation and sent them headlong into an eldritch storm. Fire, light, and fury disappeared. Only darkness remained. Narek of the Word had reached the foot of the mountain when he heard the thunder. A battered scimitar-pattern jet bike lay behind him, its fuel reserves spent, its gravitic engines no longer capable of keeping it aloft. He had used it like he used all things until it was exhausted. So even if he could have reached the jet bike, it would not matter. Craning his neck, he looked up and cursed under his breath. He'd already waited out the storm. The mountain was supposed to be still, and yet it raged anew. Halfway across a slope of jagged scree, Narek felt the earth rumble beneath him. Above, the mountain roared, and the fissure in its rocky flank he had been heading towards gave vent. A swathe of bile-yellow cloud and choking ash spewed outwards, eclipsing the meagre light of the sun. As he had tracked the gunship earlier, he had seen no sign of shelter on the desolate plain. Finding the jet bike had been fortunate. That its rider had been alone, even more so. He had killed the warrior without wasting a round. A huntsman must be as proficient with his knife as he is with his rifle. All vigilators knew that. And Narek was no ordinary vigilator. Still, his skill with either would not help him now. Nor, he suspected, would his power armor. A sand cloak, taken from the dead rider, had kept out most of the drifting ash, but it had already been damaged before he reached this grey desert, and several of his suit's mechanisms now growled in pain whenever he moved. Narek had left the rider's mantle of lizard hide. Dishonor had its limits, he had decided. He regretted doing so now, for it might have provided some additional protection. He glanced east, across his battered shoulder guard. The gully where he had taken refuge before was far away, and he sensed another cataclysm was imminent. To remain where he was also only ended one way. That left the fissure. He had watched the gunship fly into it, and so surmised that whatever lay beyond offered a greater chance of survival than he had currently. And then again, the 18th Legion were masochists and fatalists after a fashion. For all Narek knew, they had flown into the mountain to commit suicide. Some of his former cousins were very strange. Not just the former ones, come to think of it. He ran, the sand cloak fluttering wildly behind him, his long-barreled rifle slung across his back and locked to his failing generator. His armor gave an audible groan. Every greave and joint shrieked in protest. "Shut up!" snarled Narek, as he quickly clambered up the rugged slope. Behind him, he felt the earth crack, and a heat warning flared bright in his retinal lens display. He ran faster. A fumarole vented on his right, pushing him left to avoid a dousing of caustic acids. The reek of burnt ceramite came through his rebreather, and a damage sigil flashed. He pressed on, almost arachnid-like, scurrying beneath a cascade of falling rock. A cloud of ash engulfed him, the pall too wide to avoid, and he engaged prey sight to better navigate his suddenly pitch-dark surroundings. "Fiery hells!" he swore, his world reduced to degrees of light, and smiled at the irony of his words. A crag loomed up ahead, its outline dark against the intense magnesium white behind it, and Narek readied himself for a climb. He drew his knife, holding it reversed in his grip, and reasoning it might find purchase where his hands could not. About to make the leap, he stopped as the earth parted and a ragged crevasse opened in his path. He almost fell, so violent was its birth, and took a knee to steady himself. The crevasse yawned wide, a maw filled with undulant and thrashing light. Heat warnings spiked across his retinal lenses as the crag seemed to retreat from him. The fissure lay beyond the crag, but he could barely see it. The crag lay well beyond his reach. Narek looked behind him and found a rivulet of lava hemming him in. The rock underfoot had fallen away before and behind, until only a diminishing atoll remained, with Narek at the very edge of its curve. He had come here to kill a Primarch. In a galaxy and a war that had increasingly lost all meaning, it was the one thing he could cleave to. That mission had failed, which left but one recourse. Narek stood up. He reached for his gorget and unclamped his helm, letting it fall from his gauntleted fingers as soon as it was removed. Then he laughed. He laughed loudly and ruefully, cursing all the fates that had led him here, and vowing to seek vengeance against them all if there was vengeance to be had beyond death. His former cousins in the 18th seemed to think so. Perhaps they were not as mad as Narek supposed.
"Come then, fire!"
he shouted, unrepentant, as all of his past deeds were laid before him in his mind's eye.
"Come then, death! Come then, hell, and see if you are worthy of Barthusa Narek!"
He closed his eyes and felt only peace before the end, until he heard a voice. "Not yet." Narek opened his eyes. The tumult of the volcano seemed dulled, as though it were being heard from a distance or under the sea. An old man faced him, a wizened-looking creature with thin, frail arms, wearing a grubby wrapping of robes and holding a gnarled staff.
"I had expected death to look more formidable," said Narek honestly.
"Not yet, bearer of the word. You cannot die yet."
It struck Narek that the old man should either have choked to death on the fumes or shriveled in the searing heat, but he appeared unharmed and unconcerned. That alone made Narek attend to his words.
"Perhaps I have gone mad," he considered.
The old man's eyes narrowed, and it was only then that Narek noticed their shape and hue. "You are not mortal," he said, only half aware of the slowly sundering earth around him. If he was dead anyway, and this some profoundly strange rite of passage into hell, then he would let it run its course.
"I am mortal, just not as you are. But my provenance and fate are unimportant. It is your purpose that concerns us now."
"Purpose?"
Narek frowned. The burning sensation against his skin had lessened. Even the ash and rain of falling debris spewed up from the mountain had slowed to a near glacial pace.
"Who are you? Why aren't you dead?"
The old man smiled, as if such questions were unimportant.
"Have no fear, bearer of the word," he said, reaching up to place his hand upon Narek's chest.
An icon of a book had been emblazoned there once.
"There is more than one path off Nocturne."
"I fear nothing."
"I believe you. I suggest you close your eyes."
"Close my what?"
Time resumed its inexorable pace, and Narek closed his eyes as a veil of pyroclastic cloud fell over him, and the roar of the mountain grew so loud it turned to silence.